Ahoy, Vachon! Or as the French say, Vachon. This is the Brown Briefly, and I'm Michael Shook, sitting in for Brown Brian. Brown Brian. Let's start over there. No, for Brian Brown. I'm sitting in for someone. We are coming to you live. No do-overs here.
That's right. We're live, man.
From the Gene Bosch studio in beautiful, sodden downtown Vachon. And this is KVSH, the voice of Vachon, 101.9 on your FM dial. Make us part of your day. Why not? It's a swell place to stop by and listen. Be advised that the views, assertions, opinions, and rants of the Brown Briefly do not in any way reflect the opinions and views of KVSH or Voice of Vachon, nor any of their sponsors. Across from me, on a beam reach, there ought to be Bruce Hallman, our island historian and guardian of the galaxy. Alas, the chair is empty because Bruce is on his way to the land of wallabies and wombats for his annual teaching assignment. We will miss you, Bruce, and safe journeys to you. To the left of Bruce's empty chair is the indefatigable icon of indivisible Vachon. Say that 10 times really fast.
And undefeated.
I'm not going to ask how many knockouts. Kevin Jones.
Hey, that's me.
Good morning, Kevin. I believe you have some announcements. Do you want to make a couple of those now?
I'm happy to make that. Indivisible Vachon is charting the course for 2020. We have four key objectives. We will elect a new president this year. We will restore democratic control to the U.S. Senate this year. We will deepen our progressive bench in the Washington State Legislature. And there are environment and health care bills sitting on legislators' desks right now in Olympia that we're going to help move forward. And so if you want to hear more about that, on the 15th of January, Sharon Nelson will be our special guest at Vachon Co-Housing, Indivisible Vachon's monthly meeting, January 15th. Be there at 7 o'clock. 6:30 if you want to arrive a little early and touch base with other advocates of like mind. But yes, we're very excited about 2020. We're here now, and we're ready to move forward.
And the location again?
The Vachon Co-Housing, the Common House at Vachon Co-Housing.
All right. Boy, that's great. That's exciting. That's I think any person of a progressive mind would think that was a great agenda. Would that we can make it come to pass. I think we have a good shot at a lot of that.
We could.
We do. We actually just met with Representative Fitzgibbon yesterday. We met with Senator Wynn 4 or 5 days ago. They are putting together their strategy for good progressive work in this short session of the Washington State Legislature. And they're looking for people to rally behind them and support them, and likewise, they'll benefit us. So, yeah, there's a lot of good news to hear. So, I hope you be part of it.
Excellent. Let's see. To the Kevin's left, appropriately so, is the former all-star shortstop of Georgia's Dixie Debutantes.
Actually, I'd like to correct that. Oh. It's the Midway Debutantes.
Midway.
It's
Midway.
That Brian liked the sound of the the Dixie Debutantes.
Sure. Well, so do we.
Well, okay, but a footnote.
This is revisionist history at work, huh?
But I kind of like the sound of Midway too. The Midway Debutantes, because it's got that old fashioned feel to it.
It was kind of midway between Decatur and Atlanta, which is where
there
I
you
lived.
Go. Yeah. All right. Well, and I have to finish my description. A genuine Georgia peach herself.
No, I'm a cracker. I'll correct you on that, too. You don't get to be a peach unless you're on the certain side of the tracks.
Oh, wow. I didn't
know
that.
We were on the other side of the tracks. We were interlopers. My dad was from Seattle. My mother's family were actually carpetbaggers from the North.
Yankees.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So, no wonder you survived.
So I am proud to be an Atlanta Cracker, which used to be the name of their minor league baseball team.
Yep.
Wow. Baseball is in her blood, folks.
It is in my blood.
Oh, to Lynn's left, I detect a pattern of leftiness here. Is our renowned radio personality, organizer, and instigator of many and varied enrichments to our island culture, Susan McCabe. Her interview show, Real Talk, follows the Briefly at noon. Susan, what's on tap for your show?
Today we are diving into the big joy with producer Stephen Silla. Ooh. And performance artist, Jason Jen, and they're going to tell us all about James Broughton's poetry and films and the event that they are producing here with all that material at Vashon Center for the Arts this Saturday.
Oh, cool. Wow. That sounds great. A performance artist,
too. I want to
know
what the big
too.
Joy is.
Yeah.
Right.
Big joy is a good thing. Sitting directly across from me, last but certainly not least, is our mood-modulating master of mix and sound effects, Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Susan, we're so happy to have you back.
Yeah.
We missed your sound effects.
Oh, thank you. I thought, yeah, I'm trying to keep up with Michael.
Well, I got as many things here as I can do. It is Tuesday, the 7th of January, 2020. On this day, I'm just going to mention, in case anyone missed it, in 1789, those U.S. citizens who were... I have to put this caveat in. It's a day of celebration, but those U.S. citizens who were white males with land cast the first votes for president in this country. So it was a step in the right direction. A lot of folks still to bring on board.
What was the date again?
1789 on this day. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Let's hope we can make it go.
I think we're going backwards.
No, but that's why we've got Indivisible Vashon and groups like that.
That's right.
Ooh. Yeah. This is also the year of I don't know what. My friend Tom Lehman calls it the year of the optometrist. Would that it were so. We might be able to see some things, if not with crystal clarity, at least in better focus. Let us hope it is not the year of yet another war. As we know, the Iranian commanding general of the Quds Force, Major General Qasem Soleimani, was killed January 2nd by a missile fired from a United States drone. Also killed in the attack were several officials of pro-Iranian militias operating in Iraq. And now, a philippic. A brief one, since this is the briefly, but a philippic nonetheless. The attack was carried out at the behest of our narcissist-in-chief, President Dump. President Donald Dump, a perpetually petulant, whiny, self-absorbed adolescent, inhabiting the body of a bloated, badly coiffured blowhard and bully, a gargantuan liar, a cheat, a crook, and a coward, a prolific sexual assaulter of women at least, and a credibly accused serial rapist at most, a person of such low character and such stupefying foolishness and self-aggrandizement that it beggars the imagination and renders comparison to a turd defamatory to that humble, necessary byproduct of digestion. And I have not even scratched the surface of his mendacious nature, his sheer cruelty and wickedness. He is our Caligula. This is the disgusting monstrosity that the Republican Party has embraced to carry their standard. Aided by his corps of sycophants in the Senate, toadies in the House, and the lickspittles who attend him in the Oval Office, as well as those across the nation who will overlook any and everything so long as they think they are getting their way, Dump has led this nation to the brink of a war with Iran. Now what?
So, tell us how you really feel.
I'm glad there's a lack of ambiguity in that delivery, because it's very, very laser-focused.
And I love that firebrand language. I mean, that is telling it like it is.
Well...
At least from our opinion and our self-interest.
I thought it was beautifully done, and we should somehow emblazon it somewhere.
Yes, tattoo well, thank it. You.
I have to confess that I did wake up at about 5 this morning, and I felt a little bad about it, because he's a human being, and there's a part
of
me.
Are we sure of that?
We're reasonably sure. Chemical tests have shown that he does have...
there's DNA, a trace of DNA. Okay, thanks. I did not know that they'd done that test, but thank you.
But because... somehow along the line he chose to embrace the kind of person that he is, which is a tragedy. It's really sad. But when I read about his comments, the attack was crazy enough. And I'm not saying that Qasem Soleimani was a wonderful guy, but the attack was crazy enough. But then when Trump follows it up with we're going to go ahead and bomb whatever cultural sites we feel like, because we can do that if you dare do anything. And That's beyond the pale.
And all without consent of Congress.
Yeah.
Which, to me, is one of the most disturbing things.
Or against his advisors.
Yeah.
And well, against it.
Absolutely. He has flouted the very structure of our democracy, and he continues to do so. And I am enraged with our congressional representatives in the Senate and in the House who have continued to allow this to happen. And, of course, our Attorney General, who is one of his lackeys.
We're
in serious danger, and I know I'm stating the obvious, but we're looking at an oligarchy at best, if not a dictatorship that he's heading for, and I don't think it's any less serious than that.
I keep telling myself that nothing like that will happen, that people will intervene, that Mitch McConnell will finally decide that he's got enough money or enough power and do something to hold the president in check or even hold him responsible. But I don't see any evidence of that yet.
They're benefiting very clearly from things like the tax overhaul and things that have resulted in a roaring stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And, that benefits the wealthy or people who have, spent their lifetime saving. And I think that we cannot run this government when only one faction, whether it's his rabid base or the rich, benefit. There needs to be some kind of balancing touch to what governance is all about.
Well, and this act of war with Iran is a perfect distraction from impeachment. Mm.
Exactly.
In addition to which, it's a perfect way to keep his pals in the military-industrial complex working. Getting money, running the world.
Exactly. Yeah, this aggression, I think, is really important to make sure that we put it into the perspective that it really is. Because Soleimani's not the household name, for example. But my understanding is this would be the equivalent of a country essentially assassinating either Vice President Pence,
that's right,
or House Leader Nancy Pelosi.
That's right.
And so if you've taken any time to watch the coverage of the people in the streets, it's way bigger than Trump's inauguration. I can tell you that. the people are really, really angry. And the capabilities...
People of the United States.
People of the United States.
As well as the people of Iran.
The people of Iran are extremely agitated about this. And Iran has vowed that they will basically push back. And I expect that we don't know what that looks like right now. Mm-hmm. But Truman had a tremendous reference to an article by David Frum in middle of 2019, which has some other interesting aspects to it. But maybe there's other comments along the way.
Oh, right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was going, I did? Oh, yeah, yeah. On Facebook. I got
you
it.
You did.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Can you introduce it?
You know, the takeaway that I found it fascinating, first of all, that the article was written almost 7 months ago now. And the key thing was that Frum, who is wrote in The Atlantic, but is a conservative writer and was actually in support of the Iraq War of 2003. But he said at that point, Iraq was clearly a global non-player. I mean, they were not cooperative player, right? They were riling up tensions around the world. He had some very specific references to bad things that they had done. But a global alliance was formed that included Great Britain, Poland, Spain, other nations, Germany, to basically say, yes, this is an area of concern. We need to do something. This is the weapons of mass destruction have been found. We need to go in and address this. Well, of course, that wasn't true. But what we had was a dictator, Hussein, and a possibility to set the country on a better footing and to remove its negative influence around the world. Now what we have is Iran, who had signed a nuclear deal to become a better citizen, who was endorsed by European countries, the United States, before the current president. And apparently there's no evidence that they were violating any of the terms. They had a new president who was more outward-looking and wanted to become more globally acceptable as a country.
Mm-hmm.
And they were making that progress.
And they had the citizenry, the generation that has come of age since the Iranian Revolution in 79, those folks want to be engaged with the world in a much broader, deeper capacity. They want an economy that serves them all. And so they were ready and supportive of those changes.
They were. And now, in given that that's the landscape, that we now put this attack into context. Mm. Because now the United States, with no allies in support, have basically created a huge disruption, which will be felt not only by our military families who get thrown into the breach, 3,000 soldiers at this point, but also the disruption that this creates in the European economy, the relationships that the Europeans are trying to gain with hopefully formerly a rogue nation, mm-hmm. to limit their nuclear ambitions. What I heard this morning is that yesterday that Iran has now officially restarted its nuclear weapons program.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we're at.
And so
it's disturbing that we're there.
It's very disturbing. Thanks for that. That's a great detailed up to date. They're bringing us up to date, Kevin. And Israel now, of course, they're on high alert because of their antagonistic relationship with Iran, but they're right there.
Right.
And the last thing they need to see is a nuclear Iran. This has just been like deliberately going up and mm-hmm. stomping on a hornet's mm-hmm. nest without mm-hmm. any reason.
Or without any plan going forward. I haven't read everything or heard everything, but I'm wondering if anyone has been able to confirm the supposed intelligence about the alleged Iranian attacks on U.S. assets that precipitated this bombing.
Everything I have read has said that no one has seen that evidence.
Wow.
And that was, as of this morning?
Yeah.
What about you?
Crickets. Yeah.
I mean, I think, it is linked in some way to the attacks, the physical attacks on the embassy that was over there.
Mm-hmm.
And that... that may be what they're talking about, other rocks being thrown at our embassy.
Mm-hmm.
It is said that he was one of the leaders of that. But talk about false equivalencies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that the response...
Rocks versus weapons of mass destruction.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
And that kind of thing has been going on in Iran for 15
exactly.
years. So what's the difference?
Yeah, what we've had is a low-level... proxy war that's been going on, and I don't think that's a good thing. I'd love to see that sort of thing grinded to a halt. But in the context of world global relations, it was still fairly small potatoes, and if not controllable, at least we could respond in flexible, innovative ways. It gave us room to do things and for our troops there to be able to carry out their missions fairly effectively, pretty effectively, working with all kinds of different groups to try to counter terrorist threats.
Yeah, and this is a really intriguing point to me, Lynn, the one that you mentioned and that you just commented on, Michael. So on May 15th of 2019, Frum writes, if the goal of some inside the administration, U.S. administration in this case, is to goad Iran into striking first, thus forcing Trump's hand, that's a ruse that risks igniting a conflict much bigger than the one in Iraq and one even less likely to succeed.
If you just look at the map, have you seen the map of the Middle East? You want to see how big Iran is compared to everybody else?
It is huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
And I think, though, that they, in our military or whatever, and administration, were quite aware that we were striking first this time.
Well, and, the goading started before Trump took office with this
yes.
Iranian nuclear deal is the worst thing you've ever seen, right? I mean, and that's, of course, his adorable style, right? He just sort of rips everything apart.
But he was killing them in the ratings.
He was. Not when it was reality TV, it was fun.
Who said it's not reality TV now?
in
well,
his
mind.
Well,
that's the operational, standards that's that right. he's using is just whatever makes the most distracting news to take away from other things that are or are not happening. It's despicable, mendacious, hideous.
So how do we respond to this as a nation? We've still got, there's a, still a majority of people who did not vote for Trump as their president. What do we need to do here to start to reverse this? We've seen this, I'm going to kind of go back just real briefly here. We've seen this kind of Molotov cocktail throwing scorched earth approach to politics building for a long time. I was first deeply dismayed when Newt Gingrich began, burst onto the scene and immediately began calling anyone who disagreed with his policy proposals and his leadership in the House, they were traitors. They were anti-American. They were people who were, less than others. And I think it is that worked in the short term. And I think the Republican tactic since then has just been to double down over and over and over again like that. And to where here we are now.
I do know that there is some talk, and I'm guessing this is from the Democratic-controlled House, and I don't have the details. I think this is one of the things I heard on NPR in a groggy state of going to sleep or waking up. But they talked about that there is a movement to relook at the war powers of the president and of looking at the way the president needs to interact with Congress about anything like this. And so I think one of the things we can do is speak to our congressman, send a note, send a plea in for better coordination and communications and kind of more checks and balances on the system of, unfettered warfare whenever somebody has a whim.
Let those folks know, Representative Jayapal and our senators Cantwell and Murray. It probably wouldn't hurt to write some scathing emails or letters to other senators and representatives across the country. I mean, even though they're not in our state.
Well, to that end, if you have friends, relatives who live out of state, then definitely ask them to reach out. And I think that I heard Tim Kaine this morning talking about introducing a resolution, I believe, in the Senate, which would require requiring by law and then actually having a criminal president comply with the law is one thing. But I think Trump may respond to the kind of pressure. But the pressure would say that this he needs to request specific authorization for aggression against Iran, I believe, is the gist of the item that Tim Kaine is planning to introduce. So that's a very specific ask.
Well, can I ask where you found that? Where can people, see the body of the resolution being suggested?
I have not seen it. I did hear a interview with Senator Kaine this morning. So it's, I think, pretty new and may not actually be on the register of resolutions even
good.
At this
that
point.
That makes me feel better. So yeah. I was groggy and heard something. I just didn't get those details.
You weren't hallucinating? Is there such a thing as that?
I don't know. Yes.
Audio hallucination?
Oh, yes,
it is. Audio hallucination.
Wow.
Yes.
I don't have those. Not yet.
Oh, you will be blessed when they arrive. Let me. I think the specific reference is the authorization of military force. Which is currently been granted during the 2003 war, I believe. Was it right after 9/11, I think. And it's been persistent since then and used in many to rationalize these types of behaviors. But we need to clearly bring a stop to that.
And I think that authorization of military force under the War Powers Act has been eroding in large part because we've had these congressional battles with presidents. So that Clinton and Obama, when they were in office, were continually opposed for everything that they suggested doing. And so they began taking advantage of executive privilege and expanding that, and to the point that now Trump has taken that executive privilege to a monarchy state, and somebody's got to stop him. Your question, Michael, was what can we as a nation do? How do we respond? Mm-hmm. Our traditional response is to speak with our congressional representatives in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. We've been doing that.
Yeah,
those people are not acting. And I am keenly aware, as I know all of us are, that everything the House has brought to the Senate has been put in Mitch McConnell's pocket and left there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Getting rid of Mitch McConnell would be one way to loosen things up. But what about the rest of the Republican senators? Mm-hmm.
Can I just add one thing about what you described? My understanding, and Kevin, you've got better ear for details than I do, but my understanding is that after 9/11, the War Powers Act specifically was relaxed so that a president could act emergently in situations like that. And it sounds like what they're doing is rationalizing a little rock-throwing attack on an embassy with the equivalent of 9/11, and that's what I meant by a false equivalent.
Absolutely, right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Clearly that's part of the escalation that we're seeing. So my understanding is, in terms of other things people can do, is this Thursday, I think we're still getting the ink dry on the paper, but this Thursday, Move On is promoting a series of events across the country to protest the war activity. And we've heard from Suzanne Greenberg on this program before. Suzanne is just this morning emailing about her willing to take leadership to arrange an event on Vashon. We're still debating between Seattle and Vashon, but it looks like the preponderance of evidence is Vashon. So we don't have a start time yet. I'm just emailing to find out if we have one. My guess would be around 7 o'clock, maybe 6, 7 o'clock, probably at the four-way stop. But to details, keep your eye on social media. Indivisible Vashon's website will likely have the event posted as soon as we have the details nailed down.
Well, I agree. And that would have been the second thing that I would have mentioned is about, you know, there are times when we simply have to show up. We need to be in the streets, not to mention at the ballot box, but mm-hmm. we need to be mm-hmm. in the streets. I mean, look at what Iran is doing right now. Millions of people in the streets mm-hmm. saying this cannot stand. And I would love to see Americans do the same thing and say this cannot stand. We should not have done that. And let's cool down a bit.
Sure. We could take a page from the French, the farmers there. I remember when there was any time
their tractors.
Anytime there's a move afoot to mess with their food. This is how seriously they take food.
That's right.
Or the way it's grown or processed. Boy, those guys, those folks are on their tractors, and every road in France practically that leads to Paris is just comes to a grinding halt. That would get some people's attention. Of course, it'd get a lot of people arrested too, but
you know, I wonder, I was fantasizing the other day about what in the heck is going to get our legislators' attention. And I think we hit the big money folks in the pocketbooks by going on a nationwide worker strike. If we can get everybody to stop working for 2-3 days.
Now we're talking.
Would they'd have to start paying attention, because even Amazon could be hurt.
Yeah, I've thought about that too, Susan. And Seattle, of course, just last year was the 100th anniversary of the famous Seattle general strike of 1919. Only successful general strike in the history of the country. It lasted for, I believe, a week. Maybe
the
a little,
Wobblies
more.
You're talking about?
The Wobblies were involved, but there was a whole bunch of people who coordinated everything around that. And they had police who were stepping aside. No one could do their jobs. And so the people who organized it, the workers who organized it, had their own law enforcement set up so that they would, you know, quell any violence. They had food stations set up all over the place to help feed the masses. People in hospitals were still doing their work, and they were organizing ways to get people to hospitals and things like that. So it was an amazingly well organized. But I think you're right, Susan. I've thought of that. Nothing would get their attention faster than even one day. This economy is so massive that even one day would be billions of dollars lost. And that might make people scratch their heads and say,
Maybe the oligarchs need to know that their oligarchies survive only because we pawns are here to consume their stuff.
You can't, kill the goose, there goes the golden eggs. So
that's right. So we can raise our own food, right?
Well,
there is actually, intriguingly, Greg Wessel, who continues to work the Vashon Redesigned, which postulates that if we had just discovered Vashon yesterday, how would we build Vashon? And some of the considerations are sustainability.
That's a great question.
Right? Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the notion that we're not going to build like an auto parts factory here, right? So certain things will undoubtedly be imported. But the notion that what are those things that we can improve our sustainability and how would it look on Vashon today? Mm-hmm. And then that forms a possibility of a roadmap, right, to bring us into whatever Vashon looks like as we react to things like climate change or like food insecurity and things of that nature.
I love that.
No lawns, more farms.
Wait a minute. I like my lawn. I play bocce ball on it all the time.
I'm coming and dropping radish seeds in all of your lawn.
I got raised beds in the back and, you know, fig trees and stuff.
This is why God made parks.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Not in my backyard, huh?
Let's change the subject, because I can tell right now that I am on a... I'm going to lose this one.
Well, I will tell you that I had my friend from Spain visiting several years ago, and this is when I was still a park commissioner. And so I was taking him around, showing him all these parks on the island. And finally, he said, Truman, why do you have parks? And I said, well, so that they're public spaces. And I tried to explain about parks. Said, but Truman, why do you have parks? And I said, and finally he said, you live in a park.
I went, oh. Yes.
Okay, I got it.
That's true.
That's what Cynthia's always saying to me. She says, this is like our own little private pocket park here.
But we live in the park that we live in because of the work of people like the Land Trust that are really intent on preserving natural spaces and sustaining our waters and things like that. You know, it's been very intentional here, and I agree that we need to start planning for a more serious future.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also a climate meetup group, which I've just heard about in the last couple of weeks, and I don't quite know what their message or approach is. But they do talk in their literature about accommodation, right? What should we be thinking about doing? So there's a tremendous amount of emphasis on what we have and preserving it and addressing the forces that we always have to be paying attention to, you know, to keep our Vashon as beautiful as it is.
This is interesting. I've brought this up before, but it again reminds me of my grandmother and my mother when she was real young, and they lived in the Duwamish Valley, and the whole Duwamish Valley was filled with truck farms. And at that time, they happened to be Filipino and Italian because of the different waves of immigration. Farther out in the valley were the Japanese berry farmers, the Green River Valley, Puyallup, Sumner areas. And the central valley there, where now are the Benaroya's warehouses, were dairy farms. So there, the agriculture was far more regionally located, and it's not a big deal to take a bunch of eggs from Vashon to the mainland or bring back a whole bunch of fava beans or whatever else from Seattle. So it's a I like this, the idea of getting back to something that's more sustainable like that. That gives us more flexibility then, so that when we call the general strike, we can say, neener, 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 we have all the food and stuff we need.
Well, and the Vashon Be Prepared community would tell us as well that that local sustainability of food products, you know, the products on the shelves at the IGA and the Thriftway and the Mercantile are only going to last us so long. So if we have product in the fields, that extends the time at which we can get along without that support from the mainland.
That's great.
And those backyard gardens.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
To switch gears just a second, I also am going to throw in a little plea for another route, which has to do with, you know, thinking about campaign financing and all the money that goes into convincing people of the far right point of view through our dark money institutions and teaching, as well as, you know, general campaign ads. It's crazy. And having won the headline contest in the Seattle Times, and having turned in United Citizens Overturn Citizens United.
Wouldn't that be fabulous?
Wouldn't that be fabulous? Well, I looked up, so what is happening on that front? And I just want to mention that that's another bill that is stuck in Mitch McConnell's round file, because it was one of the first acts that the Democratic House did, which was to put, I think it was House resolution, it was either one or two, to contain all the money in campaign financing. And it is designed to overturn Citizens United, which, if some of you don't know, that is the strange ruling that the Supreme Court actually made in support of the corporate and PAC, super PAC monies being able to come into our election systems at will, as opposed to having limitations on personal contributions, which is what we have. The super PACs and the corporations have unlimited authority their, quote, personhood. And that's crazy. Just crazy. And the whole country wants it overturned. 70% of people want it overturned.
So there you go.
It's not right.
That's fabulous. 70%. So come on, 70% of the country that wants that overturned, get it overturned. Put the heat on your legislators.
I just heard that the newly elected progressive Seattle City Council is doing just that. One of their first act is going to be to contain campaign financing.
Excellent.
Yeah, there's always going to be. There's so much power in politics, of course, so there's always going to be tons of money trying to work its way in under the door or through the mail slot or however. That's just life. But to just take the door off its hinges to corporate money and let's face it, also large union money, you know, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars just pouring in and no one has to report it or anything else. My question is, if a corporation is indeed a person, how come they're not limited to the limits I'm limited to?
You know, that's what I'm saying. The whole thing is insane. They have made corporations persons, quote, in the light of free speech, and they are now equating massive amounts of money with free speech. And it was a masterful coup on the American public that they got away with, and it needs to be overturned. And that's a big thing for me now, especially having to put my money where my mouth is.
No, that's excellent. I'm glad you brought it up. And again, it just reminds me of a couple of pithy quotes there. A republic, madam, if you can keep it, from Ben Franklin, and from Ralph Nader more recently, you can turn on to politics, you know, in other words, get involved, or watch as politics will turn on you. And that's what we do when we don't pay attention.
Before we run out of time, so we've got about 5 minutes, I just wanted to say that I did this time bring a poem that I think is kind of apropos to this.
And thank you.
We can either end with it or I can just do it now since I've claimed the airspace.
Sure, yeah, and I meant to ask you about that. I'm glad. Good, good.
T.S. Eliot, Little Getting. It's the last poem in his four quartets. We shall not cease from exploration. And the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. Through the unknown, unremembered gate, when the last of earth left to discover is that which was the beginning. At the source of the longest river, the voice of the hidden waterfall and the children in the apple tree not known, because not looked for, but heard, half heard, in the stillness between two waves of the sea, quick now, here, now, always, a condition of complete simplicity, costing not less than everything, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well, when the tongues of flame are enfolded into the crowned knot of fire and the rose are one. I don't know what it means, but it's powerful.
It's a great poem.
It is, very much.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah.
I did want to mention, thank you for bringing that in. There's some breaking news. Breaking news, 11:31 email came in, 6 p.m. this Thursday, the 9th, Vashon, the rally about being on the brink of war. So put it on your day timers and let's have people gather. I should also mention the broader thing, Michael, that you said is what can we do? And Indivisible Vashon's focus on 2020, Susan has graciously invited us to join Real Talk.
I'm looking forward to it next week.
The 14th, we'll talk about the things that we can do, and there are many, many things we can do. The Indivisible Vashon meeting at Co-Housing, of course, we mentioned with Sharon Nelson. Mm-hmm. On the 15th, the day after the Real Talk, so show up there at 6:30 or 7 o'clock if you choose to start with the later shift. And I'll just mention one other wonderful thing that happened in 2019 that hasn't been mentioned before now, is that we've been working to get Puget Sound Energy to move away from coal, and they have 4 coal plants in Montana, except now they only have 2. Colstrip 1 and 2, the older units, have been shut down. They are not economically viable. They are massive polluters. And I think that the reality finally caught up with our utility to have them close. I'm very happy to report that.
That's fabulous.
That is wonderful. Congratulations.
Yes. Well, and we need to let the Utilities and Transportation Commission know that we would like them to close units 3 and 4. Right now, they're planning to sell them to another polluting utility somewhere out of the Washington state. So contact your legislators, contact the Utilities and Transportation Commission, who has to approve a sale of Colstrip, uh-huh. and let them know that we really want that shut down. The Clean Energy Transformation Act had that as an objective, mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that our Washington state legislators and regulators help us move in the right direction.
Excellent. Yeah, boy,
gotta
that's
be
great.
Attentive in a democracy, don't we?
You
and
do.
Active. We cannot sleep through it. It is not a baseball game. If it were a baseball game, we're in the playoffs here.
Yeah,
and it's rapidly deteriorating.
Those who sleep through baseball games just don't appreciate the nuances of it, the chess-like maneuvers that are made by managers on both sides. I won't go on about that, but
the attentiveness is
thank you.
I could say the same thing about bicycle racing, but you know it never really lit up in this country. You know, Tour de France once a year, I'm good, okay. But yeah, same thing.
What
applies.
Are they doing? They're pedaling. I don't know.
They're still pedaling.
They're still pedaling. They're pedaling well, some more now.
Look at them pedal like crazy.
Yeah, going uphill.
Oh my goodness.
All right, folks, we'll see you all next week.
Thank you very much.
All right, here we go. Ooh.